Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in. This is episode 14 of the Awful Announcing Podcast, and it is the month of April, which means it's going to be a very busy month. You have the College Basketball National Championship just concluding, baseball now in week number two of its season, and you have the Masters ahead. Tradition unlike any other, according to the one Jim Nantz, which is the focus of episode number 14. Former four-time PGA Tour winner Nota Begay will be our guest this weekend. He is, of course, on the Golf Channel and of NBC, part of their Masters coverage all week long. And you'll be able to hear him on this show dive into a lot of really interesting stories, including his early days of just knowing he was better than everybody else on the course, why he thinks golf has missed the boat on the opportunity to get their game younger. And I think it was fascinating, his answer to that, and it was really well thought out and something he's been thinking about for a while. So I'm really excited for you guys to be able to hear that part of our conversation. The inability of golf to tailor itself to more young people, I really find that fascinating. Also share some great stories of his time playing college golf with Tiger Woods, who safe to say may be a major part of coverage this week from Augusta National. That's all coming up. But before we do that, it's time to play our game. Thanks to our friends and lead sponsor of the Awful Announcement Podcast, our good friends over at Clip It. It is the best way to share your favorite clips on television with your friends, family, on your website, on your Twitter feed, wherever it may be. Download the Clip It app today on Android and on iOS. So we head out today to Washington, D.C., where Evan is joining us today. Hello, Evan.
Hello, Ben.
It's good to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast and for being a part of the game. Do you know how this game works?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. You're going to play a clip, and I'm going to try and tell you who it is.
All right, so this is somebody that has been listening to the podcast fairly frequently. That is indeed correct. You get both of the clips correct and identify them, Evan. You're going to walk away with $50 to Amazon.com. Get just one. It's $25, and if you get none of them right, you walk away with nothing, but at least you don't lose anything. You ready to play?
Sounds good.
Okay, the first clip comes from an awkward interview during March Madness with Florida State head coach Leonard Hamilton. Evan, what I need you to do is to tell me the person that is interviewing Leonard Hamilton in this clip. Take a listen.
The final seconds of this game, why didn't you guys foul?
What are you talking about?
Down the stretch there, the end of the game, the final seconds, 11 seconds left down the clock.
Do you think that the game came down to the final seconds of the game?
I'm asking you, though, why that decision in the final seconds of the game?
The game was over.
You didn't think your guys could get back in it, put them on the line if they missed those shots?
I mean, but 15 seconds of the clock, what were we down?
Put them on the line, they miss a few shots.
All right, Evan, if you can correctly identify who that reporter was in that clip, asking a very fair question at the time, who was it?
Dana Jacobson.
It sure was Dana Jacobson, right you are. So $25 to Amazon.com is yours. Nicely done. All right, the second clip, Evan, that I'm going to play for you comes from the world of Major League Baseball. One of my favorite guys was a part of this clip, and apparently he needs to get out of the house just a tad bit more. I need you to tell me which Major League Baseball analyst was discussing his knowledge or lack thereof of the world of pop culture. Take a listen.
I need to get out of the house a little bit more. I think that's fairly obvious.
Just update the playlist a little bit, too. You need some DJ Khaled on there.
I wasn't sure who he was. I thought Leonard Skinner was a guy. I thought his name was Len. I didn't know it was a band. I thought Jethro Tull was a guy.
What?
Instead of a band. And this is really bad. For a very short time in my life, a short time, I wasn't sure if Kanye West was a man or a woman. That's how bad I am at music.
This guy's the best. Evan in D.C., can you tell me who he was?
That is Tim Kirchen.
It sure was. Good old Timmy. God, he's got to get out of the house a little bit more. He's such a good baseball guy, but maybe take a break from going over the box scores of every newspaper in the country and listen to a little Kanye along the way. Either way, Evan, $50 to Amazon.com is yours. Congratulations. Thanks so much for playing, and thank you for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ben.
On the other side, my conversation with former PGA Tour golfer, now current analyst for Golf Channel and NBC, Nota Begay. That's straight ahead. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast presented by Clip It.
Welcome back to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
Back at it. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast presented by Clip It. Ben Heisler with you. Clip It is the best way to share your favorite clips from television. You can even see all of their embedded clips on awfulannouncing.com and also on The Comeback. It truly has never been easier to share. And also the audio quality is exceptional as well. So give it a try. Download the Clip It app today on iOS and on Android. We thank them for being our premier sponsor here on the Awful Announcing Podcast. Today's guest, Nota Begay, has a very unique perspective when it comes to the world of professional golf. He played college golf with Tiger Woods at Stanford, was considered by all accounts actually the better golfer during his time between the two. He won a college championship in 1994, had been a friend of Tiger's for many years, and then went on to win 4 PGA Tour events and really one of the more thoughtful analysts in the game of golf. So in that light, of course, we previewed the upcoming Masters, but I was curious to learn more about him. Want to know more about his transition to the world of media, of whether he believes golf has done enough to grow and showcase itself to a younger audience. But we started our conversation by asking him about when he first knew that not only he could be really good at a game that constantly befuddles us, but when he first knew that he might be able to do it professionally.
Well, I guess I figured when I started winning a lot of junior golf tournaments in like maybe 12, 13 years old, I had aspirations of being a professional golfer. But more importantly, I knew my parents couldn't afford college tuition. So my primary motivation as a young person was to pay for my college education. And I never thought I'd end up at Stanford or a school of that caliber, but I just always felt like that was a motivating factor for me, and it was important that I finish. And I ended up with a degree in economics and a wonderful network of friends and colleagues that I still stay in touch with. And golf has just been a tremendous opportunity for me across the board to sort of branch out and do interesting things. And one of those things ended up being television, and that was never in the game plan at all. I wasn't standing over hitting 103 footers in a row going, wow, someday I'm going to be broadcasting at the Open Championship for NBC Sports.
On the television side, it's got to be a lot more fun to second guess than when you're actually on the golf course, right? Because that can just break you down.
I'm not a big second guesser. I mean, occasionally it's relevant. I just think that that's the easy way out. I think the best broadcasters in the business are first guessers because they've done their homework. They've looked at the patterns, trends, and especially from the analyst side, because they've been in a lot of the situations that players are facing, they're able to identify with the emotion and the pressure that a given player is dealing with at a particular moment in the event. So I'm a big advocate of first guessing, and sometimes you look foolish because it's great. The player proves you wrong. You say, well, this guy's missed 24 free throws in a row, and there's a good chance he's going to miss this one. And he makes it, and right. You look a little silly, but I think it's more compelling because it engages the viewer to watch that particular sequence of events or that particular shot, and it really makes the broadcast a little bit more entertaining.
It's also a lot more honest, too, because you're going in with a mindset of this is what I would do in this situation as opposed to watching what you saw and saying, well, now this is what I would do. Was that an adjustment at all?
Yeah, it was. But I've had to make a lot of adjustments, I guess, just in adjusting the TV and knowing that my job now is to showcase the best players in the world, and I'm no longer the attraction. And, you know, your ego takes a bit of a hit because I think everybody wants to be the star of the show. But at the end of the day, my role now is to benefit our viewers and highlight the tremendous talent of these athletes that play our sport.
Before we get back into your original love for golf and what set things apart for you at 12 and 13, because I want to go back to that for a second. You were talking about most recently the idea that when you become an analyst, you're no longer the star. You're about showcasing the stars on tour. maybe it's a little bit different for golf because the longevity of your career can go much longer. But as a professional athlete, do you think that's the most difficult part? Is once you transition away from playing on a professional level full time, going into an area where you're no longer the star, where you're no longer in this routine, do you think that's the toughest part for a lot of these guys?
Not at all. I think the hardest part is learning television. I mean, that's an art in and of itself. And you see sort of athletes with I guess what you wouldn't classify as like Hall of Fame pedigrees that are really good in television. And then you also see a lot of athletes with Hall of Fame credentials that can't do television. And it's just, there's an element of analysis, statistical evaluation, understanding performance and situations, but also translating those things into entertainment. And at the end of the day, we are trying to educate and entertain our viewers while they're watching the best athletes in that particular sport showcase their talent.
We're talking to Nota Begay. He's an analyst and on-course reporter for Golf Channel and NBC. He'll, of course, be contributing to Golf Channel's coverage from Augusta National as part of the network's Golf Central Live from the Masters programming. Can we go back to what you were saying about when you were 12 and 13, winning all these junior championships and it leading you to this great collegiate career at Stanford and professional career on the PGA Tour? Did you ever have a moment where you got really sick of playing golf and it might have been something that you didn't want to pursue at the level in which you did?
Never.
Not once.
No, luckily for me, that's happening now. I really don't like golf. you know, I see what's possible. I mean, you see a Ricky Fowler and a Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas. And then guys that I grew up playing with, Mickelson and Tiger, and they're just doing extraordinary things with their bodies at different ages. I mean, there's 20 years that separate or more that separate these players. And I go and I hit balls now and it goes straight, but it doesn't go very far. And you just kind of, you miss what you're able to do when you're playing full time. But that's the reality. So I don't really enjoy golf too much anymore. I still go out and I do it cause my kids like to play. And, I got to keep in touch with it just because I think if you ever lose sight of how difficult the game is, you're missing out on part of the things that you need to, one of the things you need to understand as an analyst is that it's a hard game and it's not played on a computer or on a spreadsheet, but to identify with really how difficult these athletes make, that they're dealing, what they're dealing with on a week to week basis.
Do you think that that's maybe a little bit misunderstood when it comes to golf, knowing that you can start playing as early as 4, 5, and 6 years old and play all the way up until you're octogenarian and in 90s. And because it's there, because of the longevity of the sport, do you think maybe that allows for, I guess, novice players and those that don't play professionally to think, you know what, if I just make this one tweak to my swing, or if I get some better clubs, you know, I could be not necessarily as good as the pros out there, but I could do this on a fairly decent basis. Do you think that's maybe a little bit misunderstood?
I'll give you a perfect example of that. When I was living in Dallas, I got to play a lot of golf with Tony Romo, and he is by far the most gifted, the most capable of the celebrity athlete type of, I guess, elite amateur golfers by far. I know he doesn't win any of these celebrity events or whatever, but I've seen most of these guys play, and Tony really has what it takes to be a wonderful golfer. And he played last week against probably one of the weaker fields on the PGA Tour that we're going to see this year and didn't play very well. It's so much more. What these guys do is so much more than
getting the ball from point A to B, that is literally impossible for the average golfer to understand. And I think that, but also it lends itself to the huge opportunity for each player, regardless of skill level, to enjoy the game and continue to improve, because there's always things to work on. There's always opportunities to make your game better. And that's kind of the, I guess, the million-dollar question is, what do I work on next? And is it going to hurt me, and is it going to help me? And I think you see tour pros are dealing with that, and 10 and 15 handicap players are dealing with that. And I think that's what's really unique about our game, is that it really brings the viewers, our fans and our viewers, very, very close to the athletes that they admire and try and emulate.
I think that's a great point. And I think especially with golf, because you can get started at such an early age, and that's actually transitioning to what I want to discuss with you next, as we're joined by Noda Begay from the Golf Channel here on the Awful Announcing Podcast. I love having this discussion about the future of sports and how they're able to relate to not only their current audience, but their younger audiences as well. When it comes to golf, do you feel like golf has evolved enough to get a younger audience and to get a younger following? I know there's kids that are now going to golf courses on the beginning stages, like they're playing foot golf to get a feel for what it's like to be out on the golf course. There's more par threes. There's Top Golf that's starting to blow up across the country. I guess, how do you think golf has and maybe will continue to evolve over time?
Well, I guess the first part of your question is, have we done enough? And we absolutely have not done enough. You know, the biggest obstacle to making golf a little bit more appealing to a younger audience is, number one, it cannot be cost prohibitive. I mean, you buy a football for $15 and you can get 15, 20 kids on a field playing at one time. You buy a basketball, you can get 10 kids on the court, full court, playing at a single time. But that's just not, you know, that's a singular purchase at one point in time, and that ball could last you 6 months to a year, or until it, you know, gets run over by a car, or the kids lose it.
Right.
But in golf, it's like you have your entry level costs, your fixed costs on, okay, if I want to do this, even if I don't buy golf shoes or a glove, I have to buy equipment. I have to find a bag and clubs. And even if you buy a half set, you know, how do you get past that? And then there's all of the variable costs that go along with that, that are, you know, changing depending on where you go. Are you going to play semi-private, public? Are you going to, you know, hit range balls? Are you going to buy, you know, brand new golf balls to play with? I mean, so, you know, that's the single biggest obstacle. I don't know if that'll ever change, and I think that that's really where the large governing bodies need to really take a serious look on sort of how do we supplement or offset those costs for a young person, even if it's just borrowing equipment for a given period of time to let a young person enjoy the game. The second part is, golf takes way too long. So I think as we emerge as a sport, you're either going to have to find, you know, 6-hole, 9-hole, 3-hole leagues, or little routes on courses. Short courses are great. I think that the sooner you can get a young person hooked on hitting a good shot, making a par, making a birdie, and they're not going to do that when the par four is 460 yards. So they're going to play it in 10 or 15 shots versus there's a great little public course in my town. It's one of the municipal courses in Albuquerque called Los Altos. And they have a little 9-hole where I think the longest hole is like 180 yards, and that's a par four. That's the kind of things that we need to continue to introduce to kids to make it more appealing. I think Top Golf is, you know, moving on, Topgolf is a wonderful attraction for sort of the 20-somethings. I mean, they really love it. They love to go there because you don't even need to be great at golf. You don't have to know how to play the game. You don't need to know the rules. All you need to do is be able to drink a couple beers and make contact.
Sometimes people don't even make contact.
Yeah. So the success requirement there is very low, which is great, because I think that's why it's so appealing to non-golfers, and that's probably, from a non-institutional standpoint, the biggest asset golf has going for it right now. Now, from an institutional standpoint, you have to look at what Augusta National has done for golf, which is absolutely remarkable. I mean, you have CRCU and the PGA have tried to institute different grow the game initiatives that have had little or no impact on getting more kids into the game. But, you know, the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship, the Latino America Amateur Championship, the Drive, Chip, and Putt are probably the three single biggest grow the game concepts that have been introduced in the history of our game. And you have to give Augusta National credit for lending their brand and being able to introduce those things around the world, because they realize the importance of golf and how it is growing around the world. And I think that when you see on Sunday the Drive, Chip, and Putt taking place, some of those kids are going to end up on the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour. And it's because of Drive, Chip, and Putt. And I think that that's something that sort of needs to be acknowledged. And I think it's wonderful that Augusta has taken that step to sort of remove some of these boundaries and make golf a lot more fun. I mean, they're not compiling an 18-hole score, and these 9, 10, 11-year-olds aren't out there, you know, trying to navigate creeks and carry force carries over bunkers. They're just drive, chipping, and putting. I mean, it's a very simple concept that is really going to be instrumental in the growth of our game.
I think that's a great assessment, to be able to sort of start from the inside out. Nota Begay is joining us here on the Alpha Announcing Podcast. He's an analyst and an on-course reporter for the Golf Channel and NBC. Of course, he'll be contributing to Golf Channel's coverage from Augusta National as part of the network's Golf Central Live from the Masters programming. I could keep discussing the changes and evolution on how to fix golf and sports in particular for, you know, hours, but I know you have limited time, so I'm glad you brought up Augusta, because of course it is Masters week. Hard to avoid the big narrative going into the week is, of course, Tiger. Hopefully being healthy, hopefully being in contention for the first time in quite some time for a major championship. And I know you guys go way back, 30-plus years. You have a great friendship. Tell me about what it was like at Stanford together, the two of you guys. What would people not expect about you and Tiger together that maybe people would have initially thought?
I guess when he showed up to campus, he didn't show up as this sort of world beater and intimidating force. He was kind of just a nervous freshman like everybody else that showed up on campus their first time away from home and not having a lot of friends and not knowing what to expect from the new environment. And He was in that category, and you know, he had me as a friend that we've been friends for 10 years up to that point, and he just slowly immersed himself in the school and the academic part and the golf team, and he was great. I mean, he got on campus, and we had already won a national championship the year before he got there in 1994, and so when he got to school, he wasn't going to make us any better, because we had just been the best. So that was kind of an interesting situation for him to walk into, and a little different for him because we had four seniors on our starting lineup and then Tiger Woods. And so he was the lone freshman. And
we gave him a hard time. I mean, he showed up on campus, and I told him he was going to be the strongest freshman in the conference, and he thought I meant because of his golf, but I actually meant because he was going to be carrying our luggage for us when we went on trips. And to his credit, I mean, he carried it. I mean, he paid his dues, and he dealt with all the harassment and the hard time that we would give him, and he laughed about it, and it was great. And there was a rule that the freshman had to sleep on the rollaway, because we would only get two rooms for the players, and there were three in one room, two in the other. And Casey and I, because we were team captains, Casey Martin, who's now the men's golf coach at University of Oregon, would take the one room, and then we'd put the other three guys in the other room, and Tiger got issued the roll away, and he was great about it. I mean, there was no complaining, a little here and there, but he knew that we had already accomplished the highest achievement as a team in the golf, and you know, he could make us as good, but he wasn't going to make us better. And so he just really blended into our team dynamic, and with our coach, who Wally Goodwin, who was a little unorthodox, you could do an entire show on him. But it was just a fun time. And it's, you know, from where Tiger has gone to his achievements to the challenges that he's faced in his life, he looks upon those times very, very fondly. He really appreciates those friendships with Conrad Ray, the men's golf coach now at Stanford, who was on our team, and Casey and Will Yanagisawa, and all the guys that he got to become friends with over that 2-year period that he was there. You would have never have imagined the impact that he was going to have and what he was going to do in the game by watching him walk on campus freshman year. I mean, he was really skinny. He wasn't the version that we see now. And like I said, he was just there to try and find his footing and see if he could handle the school and everything that went along with college, which every freshman that steps on campus for the first time has to deal with.
A lot of times people think about the team effort of, you know, playing on a college team, and maybe that stands out a little bit more than an actual win on the tour. Did you feel that way at all?
I do. I think it's harder. I mean, you get one chance a year, and you've got five variables in terms of the players that you're relying on versus one when you're trying to win PGA Tour events, and you usually get 25 to 30 chances a year to do that. So winning a national championship, you've got a lot of great resumes on the PGA Tour that don't include a NCAA team championship.
I want to go back to Tiger for just a quick second. When I'm still fascinated of why people continue to be so drawn to him, and not as much to the future of the sport with guys like Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and so on and so forth. Why do you feel like the collective golf fan has hung on to this waning legacy of Tiger? He hasn't won a major championship since, I think, 2007, 2008, since President Obama first took office. Do you feel like fans are maybe thinking, like, there's still that last bit of hope left, and I don't want to get off the train until I know for sure?
I mean, in a nutshell, it's just nostalgia. I mean, that was, gosh, 18 years ago. So where were we all 18 years ago, and what were we doing 18 years ago? I mean, it's like, you know, a movie or a song or something that always reminds us of whether it was high school or college or something that had that kind of feeling of you know, when things were good. I mean,
yeah,
it's you talk to your grandparents or your parents, and they always talk about, well, when I was growing up, things were good, things were different. And I think that's the case with Tiger. He's just kind of, and that's the interesting thing about golf, is that it has that ability to take us back in time, because guys like Phil Mickelson are winning tournaments at the age of 47, and Tiger's making, you know, finishing top five his last two starts at the age of 42 with a fused back. I mean, and I think that it's allowing people from my generation and maybe my father's generation to relive it one more time, but it's also introducing it to a whole new generation of potential athletes that will look at that as sort of, you know, if he ends up winning a tournament or a major or something in the next couple of years, we'll look at that as one of the greatest achievements in sports.
The other component too is that with nostalgia, Augusta National has that impact on people, even on the very casual golf fans. It's sold on nostalgia. Its message is a tradition unlike any other. So I think if he were to come back and play an exceptional 4 days of golf at Augusta this year, certainly that would compile a great narrative for him. I want to get you out on this, and I really do appreciate your time. Nota Begay from the Golf Channel, kind enough to join us on the Awful Announcing podcast. If I said, Nota, that you could take five guys or the field at Augusta, who would be the five guys that you'd have to take to feel like you'd have as good of a chance to pick a winner as anybody?
I would take Tiger, Phil, Spieth, Rory, and Bubba Watson. And who would be the fifth guy? Justin Rose. I mean, I think that those five guys could sort of handle a variety of different situations, whether it's weather or course condition changing. I mean, that's kind of my mutual fund of Augusta picks.
I like it. Nota Begay, watch him on the Golf Channel all throughout this week for Golf Channel and also with NBC. He'll be contributing to Golf Channel's coverage from Augusta National as part of the network's Golf Central Live from the Masters programming. Nota, it's been great catching up with you. Thank you so much for your time and for your insight and for your thoughtfulness and candor as to the future of golf. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I did too. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Nota Begay for hopping on the Awful Announcing podcast for episode 14. Hope you guys enjoyed our conversation. Always love the feedback as well. You can follow us at Awful Announcing. I am at Benny Heiss on Twitter. Please go ahead, and if you haven't found us on iTunes yet, we encourage you to download the podcast there as well as to rate us and leave us a review. Always appreciate the feedback. We're trying to get more guests that you guys are interested in hearing from, and it's all part of this process of us growing together. So thank you all for listening. This has been the Awful Announcing podcast presented by Clip It. This is Ben Heisler. We will talk to you again soon. Take care.